She only TFO is the yerba mate.
Yerba mate?
What?
Yerba mate.
Good evening, friends.
Hello.
This is day three of our 10-class presentation, and Richard Capsule is ready for you. He's got a lot of very important things to say about the soul body tonight. It's very important, so I'll let him start.
All right, in this talk, we're going to talk about astrology and the life ether. And what we're going to do is take one characteristic or one function of the vital body and use it to derive another function, just so as a way to work into it. Now, the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that within our solar cosmos, there are seven different interpenetrating worlds. And each of these seven interpenetrating worlds has seven subdivisions. And they're each different from each other. And the reason for this is to give a variety of experiences, taking cycles and sub-cycles and sub-regions and sub-sub-regions, we are treated to all sorts of experience. This is why adaption is such an important part of evolutionary development of character. We have to adapt to many different things. Now, the reason for this is that each kind of experience, each kind of environment or atmosphere brings something out of our becoming spirit. The spirit is like the spark of God, but it has infinite potential. And the way the evolutionary creation is designed, it is designed to bring out many different sides of the character. Now, in some cases, the divisions or subdivisions or the worlds are extremely different from each other. We began talking a little bit about this last evening. Last evening was one of those talks that had way too much information, and we only did about 60% of it, and it was still too much. I'm sorry for that. Ever since I've been a child, my mother has said, your eyes are bigger than your stomach. And I have that kind of personality that I seek out more than I can handle. But the nature of the chemical region of the physical world that we live in, and that occupies most of our attention for most of our life, is that it is completely outward. There is only outwardness. If we take anything, solid substance in this world, and we cut it open, we don't see the inside. We just see a new outside. And so that's one of the big differences. The other worlds beyond the ethers, the desire world, the world of thought, and especially the spiritual realms, the transcendental realms, are primarily internal. All experiences are within. There are forms of the desire world, and there are forms in the world of thought, but the forms are not as important as the meaning. The deeper one goes in the direction of the spirit, end of the pole of the spirit and matter, the more one gets to where there is meaning, where there is truth, where there is a creative spirit. The more one comes toward matter, the more the focus is on form. The form is necessary for the spirit to objectify itself and to know itself through the forms that it creates, but this is a radical difference. They're called inner worlds, the worlds beyond the ethers, because they are experienced within. Such that if we focus our attention on something that is apparently outside of us, we don't understand it except if we find it in ourselves and we have an inner experience. This is, I can go into a side trip there, but I better not. So inner world clairvoyance, like desire world clairvoyance, is very different than the perception that we have in the physical plane. For example, if you see someone and you see the desire aura, it becomes, you don't see it with your eyes, you see it with your own desire nature. And it's an interesting thing because what you're seeing is that you're seeing a physical form and occupying a different space, but yet in the same area as the physical form is the desire body. It's from a different world. Now the etheric realm is every bit as unique as the etheric region of the physical world is every bit as unique as the chemical region. It is the in-between world. It is between the inner worlds and the world that is almost exclusively outward. So the ethers and our vital bodies form a bridge between the inner worlds and the outer worlds. It has one foot in both worlds, in each of the worlds, I guess would be the proper way of saying it. So one of the primary functions that we know for the etheric body is transport or communication. It takes the active powers from the higher, more spiritual bodies and brings them into the relatively inert physical bodies and enlivens them and finalizes experiences in this world. And then the effects of those experiences, the essence of those experiences, pass through the ethers into the more spiritual realms where the spiritual meaning for them is found. So this transport is a primary function of the etheric body and of the etheric world. Now, some spiritual philosophies teach that this is the only function of the vital body, that it's just there as a convenience for as long as we are quarantined in our exile into fallen materialism, or we have closed off the spiritual worlds and receive relative little meaning when we are in the physical world. That's not a correct philosophy. The vital body is a vehicle in its own right, and it has its importance every bit as much as the dense physical body has its importance. And to not develop the vital body, especially the soul body part of the vital body, is a grave evolutionary error. We're not talking about making a simple little faux pas. We're talking about an error that, in terms of evolution, is quite tragic. Now, one of the functions of the vital body is to form the matrix for the chemical substances of the dense physical body to enter into and become the formation that our dense physical body is. And the ethers have the function of generating that body and changing it, modifying it, taking new substance in and expelling other substance. Obviously in this, the mineral kingdom is evolved by having the experience of our consciousness, that is, if our consciousness is decent, it gets the experience of being in our body, and then that experience is given to other minerals. And so constantly, like the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches, every atom within the dense physical body is changed once every 7 years. Every atom but one, and that's the one at the seat of in the heart. Now, we're looking at, in this talk, we're looking at the life ether. And we're looking at it relative to each of the other ethers. It is a principle that if the etheric body is to convey things from the higher worlds and the lower worlds, it must be like the things that it conveys. You cannot, if there is no harmony or if there is no likeness between the etheric body and what it's supposed to be conducting or transporting, it can't bring that across. So what we want to do is we want to explore how the vital body is like each of the other bodies. Each of the, you know, the mind, the desire body, and the dense physical body. I'm going to be careful. I'm getting away from my notes, and that's always dangerous. So, we are in these bodies all day, every day. While we are awake, we are thoughtful beings, we have emotions and desires and other motivations, we have a vital existence, and we're receiving impacts in our dense physical body because most of the things in the dense physical body are accomplished through impact. Even light impacting on the physical body is the way we experience it. We ourselves, you who I am speaking to, are foci of the universal spirit. Each of you is in your own right a divinity. At this point, our divinity is minimal in that we haven't done enough yet to unfold it, but we are divine beings that participate in the truth, and we are truth knowers. We couldn't even communicate with each other if each of us wasn't capable of recognizing the truth or of knowing the truth. This is why it's very sad if somebody has a life well that they have to live like a mongoloid idiot or something like that. They cannot appreciate in full the truth of the life that they are passing through. So the more that we are aware and that we can appreciate the glory of what we are in and see the truth of it, the better it is for us. So our different vehicles, that is the vehicles that serve the divine being, are called vehicles of consciousness. And each of them give a different aspect of the nature of consciousness. This is why the different worlds exist, and this is why we have the bodies that relate to those worlds, because there are basic fundamental lessons we need to know. We need to be able to know the truth in an objective mental way. We need to have emotions so that we can appreciate the flavor of things. And of course, in the vital body, we have to be able to appreciate action, to feel vital, to feel lively. My wife, when I was married, was very sensitive to that. She would take a glass of fresh carrot juice and she could feel it was like off of her body. She could feel the energy coming off. And she says, I feel like I'm a lawn, like I have grass growing out of me or something like that. We have dense bodies, which are more a matter of mass than of anything else. These are the bodies that we see every day and that we become preoccupied with, especially if we have an illness or a long-term physical condition. We become preoccupied with our physical bodies. So much so that many people, especially those who do not know about spiritual philosophy, think that this is all there is to us, that all we are is something physical. The etheric subdivision of the physical world and our vital bodies are subtle enough so that most of us do not see them. It functions so perfectly and it takes care of us so well that we don't even know that it is there. This is the way it is with truly spiritual things, especially things that come to us through the ethers. This is why Christ repeats several times in the Gospels, it cometh as a thief in the night. In our spiritual lives, we don't look for more spectacular things or more intense things. In order to grow spiritually, we have to become more subtle. Because the trials which awaken us to the different spiritual worlds become more and more subtle as we go along. We have desire bodies, and in those desire bodies, we experience emotions and feelings, desires and passions. And these are even more subtle than the etheric body. The desire, most people don't even know what their desires are. Until they have acted on them almost unconsciously, they don't know what they are. Increasing in subtlety, our minds are so rare that most people are not conscious of even having a mind. If you talk to many people on the street, they think thoughts happen. They don't think about a deliberate action of creating a thought, of creating a form through which you can objectively test whether something is true or not. So most people are unaware of their subtler bodies, and the more subtle the body, the more unaware most people are. Now this gives us a pretty good understanding of what a human being is. A human being is a spiritual focus. It is a self. And that self thinks, and the thoughts stimulate emotions, and the emotions move us to take vital actions, and the vital actions produce concrete effects in the physical body. The consequences of those physical effects are taken through the etheric body, and they are refelt in the desire body, they are rethought in the mind, and then they are absorbed and assimilated into the spirit, and the spirit in that becomes conscious through this kind of cycle. Sometime I'd like to come and offer a series of 10 talks on cycles in Rosicrucian philosophy. It's a very interesting topic. So we are truth knowers, and it is our duty to really know the truth. The Rosicrucian philosophy gives us an excellent description of what we are. And it's not a textbook description. It is something that we can test out with our own lives. We can see that we emote, and we can see that we think, and we can see that with our thoughts we can control our emotions. And we can see that our emotions control our actions, even if we don't want them to sometimes. So all of the things that the Rosicrucian philosophy says about our somatic being and through all of our bodies are to me something that had been proven many times over, and it becomes a clearer reality all the time. Now, we want to talk about this conveyance of experience here into the spirit and conveyance from the spirit to here. As we just said, in order for something to convey something else, it has to be sufficiently enough like the thing that it conveys. Now, this sounds all very heavy and pretentious and things like that, but we're trying to get to a really simple idea. Both of the talks this evening are very simple. I have trouble with visions. I had a detached retina, and I had several operations on my eye, and sometimes my vision isn't always very good. Now, we talked yesterday when we talked about the chemical region of the etheric realm. We talked about that the almost exclusive function in our vital bodies of the chemical ether is building and maintaining form. And that is by holding minerals in our vital body, matrix, so that we have the physical form that we have. And in general, in cosmological astrology, Saturn rules the minerals. So we can say that the chemical subdivision of the etheric world, or the vital body, is ruled by Saturn. Now, the way we look at things in cosmological astrology is not the same as we look at things with horoscopy. In cosmological astrology, you have to have an enormous amount of knowledge because the same symbols are used in different ways. Because each of the periods and each of the revolutions and each of the globes has an analogous astrological flavor to it. So there's a Saturn period, there's a Saturn revolution, or there are many Saturn revolutions, and there are Saturn globes. We call them A, B, C, D, E, F, G. A is Saturn. We do that so we don't confuse those globes with the Saturn that's up in the heavens. But so we have to be very careful with cosmological astrology because the same symbols point to a lot of things. And unless one has an intuition, it's very hard to follow cosmological astrology. Cosmological astrology is an initiate astrology, and if one is not an initiate, one is not likely to be very proficient. Now, the other subdivisions of the etheric part of the physical world are not quite as simple as the relationship of the chemical ether to the vital body and its relationship to the chemical subdivision of the physical world. This is very clear, very patent. This is something that there are chemical laws that we can follow, that these things always take place. Now, let's take this likeness of function and start looking at the other ethers. Let's look at the reflecting ether. Obviously, the reflecting ether would correspond to the mind, and it is the primary vehicle for transport of things from the mind to the physical and from the physical to the mind. And this is precisely what the Rosicrucian philosophy teaches. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that there is a special resonance between the concrete mind and the reflecting ether in the etheric brain of the vital body. It is a resonance that is so strong and so clear, it is almost like a direct link. So we can see then that the reflecting ether of the vital body is associated with the concrete mind. Now, by simple analogy, we would begin to think that the light ether would relate to the desire world and to the desire body. Now, there is not a special resonance, but it is clear that there is a resonance between, and a strong resonance between, the desire body and the light ether. For example, in all beings in this world that have vital bodies that have light ether in it, the coloration is a consequence of the negative pole of the light ether. And we know that color is at its ripest in the desire world. In fact, the desire world is called the color world. In fact, the way it is said, when we feel a desire in the desire body or in the desire world, we feel the same way that we do, or in a very similar way to the way we do when we see that color in this world. So there is a connection between the desire body, the desire world, and the light ether of the vital body. There's more than that. And this is where we're trying to get to. In fact, in the second talk, we're going to talk a lot more about this. The desire body, at this time in our evolution, it may not be that way all of the time throughout all of our evolution, but the primary function of the desire body at this time in our evolution is motivation. It is the desire body that motivates us. If it were left up to the vital body alone, it would vegetate, and it would take care of itself, and it would be housekeeping ad infinitum. But the desire body moves us, it pushes us, it drives us. Now that, if you look at it, the positive pull of the reflecting ether is in everything that has everything that has a light ether component in its vital body, all of the fluids are driven from the positive pull of the light ether. It's not like a motivation, but it is a driving force. The blood is driven by the positive pull of the light ether as much as it is by the pumping of the heart. In fact, the light ether in the blood drives the heart as much as the sinoatrial node does. So we can see then that there is a relationship between the light ether of the vital body and the desire world. This leaves nothing left for the life ether other than to say that the life ether corresponds to the etheric world and to the vital body, which is another way of saying that the life ether component of the vital body is the epitome of the vital body, which is true. The vital body is vital, and the life ether is what provides the vitality. So we can see very clearly then, if we're trying to understand the light ether as we're trying to understand it today, it is a thing in itself. It is the part of the vital body that is essentially fulfills the living and growing, the sexual division of the cells as we grow or change shape. All of that is controlled by the life ether in the vital body. The ability to move, metabolic ability to move through the muscles, they may be stimulated by the nerves and by the mind and the desire body, but the actual doing of it depends on the vital body. And the vital body is very faithful. It carries out whatever it is commanded to do. It does so until it is exhausted and we fall asleep and it has to be repaired. So it's very clear that the life ether represents what the vital body is all about relative to being alive in this plane. The flux, we're saying all along that in the etheric subdivision of the physical world, each of the ethers has form and life just as everything in the cosmos does. In there are etheric atoms, and there is an etheric flux that passes through them. And this etheric flux is what replenishes it. Last night we spoke a little bit about a chemical ether flux coming from the sun and replenishing the chemical ether of everything in the solar system so that it continues to function as it does. You know, it loses a lot to entropy, so that it has to be replenished. There's something very important in this. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that there are two types of digestion, and they are opposite of each other. One is physical digestion. We need foodstuffs to replace things in our physical body. And we need stuff for burning caloric energy. So we take in food that is easy to digest. And that is food that is cooked. The cooking breaks it down and it is a sort of a pre-digestion. But if we are eating for the vital body, we never want to cook. Because when we eat for the vital, because if you heat food, it drives the ether out. So if you want to replenish the life ether of your vital body, what I do is I try every day to take 2 pints of various different kinds of fresh vegetable juices. I have a kind of juicer that preserves as much of the vitality as possible, and as soon as I get the juice out, I chug-a-lug it. because I'm not in it for digesting with the, you know, with the ptyalin and all of the other digestive enzymes. I'm taking it for the etheric component. And so some people, like Max Heindel, took raw milk. If you can get raw milk straight out of the cow or within a few minutes of the cow, it is very revitalizing. Max Heindel, for example, used to do magnetic healing, and he would give some of his own energy, the flux of life ether from his own vital body, he would give to patients and re-energize them after he had taken the miasma off of them. So what we're talking about is, this is an important thing, the more that you can eat, especially vegetables, when things go to the fruiting state, the chemistry is different and the use of the ethers is different. It is going into the process of seeding for reproduction, and there is not as much potency. Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that if you want to eat fruit for vitality, you eat seedless fruit, such as navel oranges or something like that, because they are not putting so much energy into the seeding process. So we can re-energize ourselves in our vital bodies by taking in a flux or a flow of energy. Now, it's clear to us, or it should be clear to us now, that the function and nature of the life ether is energetics. Now, what is necessary now that we know the reason for the life ether, we now need to find its astrological correspondence. Now, in the very first of these astrology talks on the vital body, this is really an astrology talk, believe it or not. We've talked about everything but astrology. But in the first of these astrology talks, we talked about the vital body in general being ruled by the sun in Leo, having been built by the built into the physical body by the lords of the flame in the sun period. So it has that sun relationship. Now, one way we can get at the astrological rulership of the life ether is by looking at things in a stacking way. It's a sort of a klutzy, materialistic way of looking at things. If we see that the lowest of the ethers relates to the lowest of our bodies, the dense physical body is related to the chemical ether, the next body up should be related to the next element up, water. So we go from an earth ruling the chemical ether to water ruling the life ether. Now, this is a mental correspondence, so we need to check this out to understand whether it is true or not. The Rosicrucian philosophy teaches that this is most certainly true. In fact, Max Heindel writes that there is a great affinity between life ether and water. Water can dissolve large amounts of light ether and carry it. We talked about frost flowers last night, and that shows that even when the water is vaporous, it carries the etheric mold or form within it. Now, if we think about it, this is perfectly true to nature. Everything that lives must have water. There is nothing that has a vital existence that does not have water. And the water is the means of ingress of the life ether into a dense physical body of any type. So we can see that even though we began with the mental analogy, what we are trying to get at seems to be proving right. This is one of those things, what Max Heindel said, about the life ether and water being together. If you take vegetables, green vegetables, when they're starting to, when they become slightly dehydrated, the life ether leaves them. You go to every supermarket in Southern California, and I'll guarantee you that several times a day they sprinkle them with cold water. And when they do, the cold water gets reabsorbed and the leaves are not wimpy anymore. They get their turgor. They have the vitality back inside of them. So one rulership of the life ether component of the vital body or in nature in general is that it is ruled by water. Now, there is another affinity, an indirect affinity that we can find that brings us closer to what we're looking for. And that is the affinity between water and the moon. And that affinity between water and the moon is more than just the tides. Max Seindel tells us that all of the plant growth and plant activity is dependent on the moon. And the plants are almost, the vital body of plants is chemical ether and primarily life ether. That is the service of the plant kingdom. The plant kingdom specializes life ether as vitality, and it serves the animals and the humans because we can then eat the plants and then we are vitalized. Everything that exists in the cosmos, no matter how primitive its state of evolution, offers us something as a service. And the service of the plant kingdom is vitalization. Now, there is a very excellent book if you would like to look into this in detail and you're willing to go through something very, almost boring with a lot of graphs and things like that. The name of the book is called Moon and Plant. And the author of the book is a woman named Agnes Pfeiff, P-F-E-I-F. And in this book, it is demonstrated how plants take up water according to the positions of the moon and the things that are absorbed into plants, and various different types of plants are indicated by the moon in relation to the plant kingdom. Shows what we've been talking about in great detail, and it becomes indubitable when you see that kind of scientific evidence. Now, there is something that we've talked about in some of the evening talks, but have not talked about yet in the afternoon astrology talks, and that is the polarity of the vital body and of the ethers. All of the ethers, whether it is in the form state of etheric atoms or in the case of a flux, they're all polarized. We've noted that this is unique to the etheric subdivision, and none of the other realms or subdivisions have this polar quality. And we have inferred that this is so because at the positive poles of each of the ethers, as we have just spoken of them earlier in this talk, there is a relation to the higher spiritual worlds, and at the negative pole, there is a receptivity or formalization to this chemical region of the physical world. And that the polarization is necessary because this world is primarily a world of form and of reception, and that the higher worlds, the more deeply you go into the higher worlds, the more they are worlds of activation and of really life in a much different sense, in a much higher sense of the word life. We talked enough about that last night so that we can proceed along here pretty swiftly. We'll get to horoscopes yet. this is an astrology talk. Different people have different strengths in their vital bodies. And this emanates from them, and it emanates from them beyond the periphery of the vital body. For example, I go walking four nights a week. I walk about 3.5 miles. And I found here that if you take a a peripheral walk, staying on the concrete all the way around the ground, you can get just a little over a mile. And so if you go three times around the outside of the grounds, you've walked a little over about 3 1/4 miles. But I go walking late at night, and I go to the Capitol Square, which is a safe place for an older person to walk, because there are Capitol Police there and there are city police there, and every inch of it is under surveillance cameras. Once in a while you get hit up by a panhandler, but it's not so bad. And I have one friend that goes along walking, and he's got all kinds of leonine energy. He's built like a baby Sherman tank, and he just sort of grinds along. And it's comical to watch that every time we come to, you know, a lot of lampposts have electronics in them. And people with strong vital bodies can trigger the electronics. And we'll go walking along, we'll come up to it, up to one of these posts, and he'll turn the lights on or turn the lights off just by the nature of the strength of his vital body. So what we're talking about is that some people have more vitality in their body, and some people are capable of holding more vitality in their vital bodies. And this is one of our goals. If we want to be healers, which means we are magicians, we want to be able to control everything that is within our consciousness. So we want to be able to control especially the life ethers so that we can draw off the problematic ether on somebody who is ill, and that we can project energy to them from our own. We talked about, on the first day, we looked at the horoscope of Max Heindel, and if you will remember, we saw that he had both sun, moon, and ascendant in Leo, and that the moon was trine to Neptune. And from that, we said that Neptune represented spiritualization of things and spiritual control of things. It is the planet of magic, and the moon represented the ability to control the ethers. So this shows very clearly that in the Max Heindel chart, he had the ability to draw ethers off or to project ethers in. And so what we're wanting to look at for a little bit is when we look at this horoscope, we want to look at people who can control the energies or who actually deal with the energies themselves. Now, we're not going to look at people who have super powerful vital bodies, but some of them lean that way. And we're going to just look at the vitalization of it all. So let's begin looking at horoscopes. We got 12 minutes to do this. This is called Magnetic Man, and the source of this horoscope is from Alan Leo, the famous theosophical astrologer from England. He has a lovely little book. If you can find them in used bookstores, it's called 1001 Horoscopes, and it has some very unique horoscopes in there. And this is one of those horoscopes. I'll put it up higher so everybody can see the horoscope now. Incidentally, if any of you want the data for these horoscopes, I can always give it to you, and you can write it down, and you can study them on your own. This man, his real name is G.W. Smythe, or Smith with a Y, S-M-Y-T-H. He is nicknamed Magnetic Man. And this horoscope is backfitted by rectification, because the exact data is not available, so it could be off by as much as 2 or 3 minutes. But we're not doing anything that requires extreme accuracy, so we can say that this is all right. This is not a perfectly good example of what we've been discussing. The reason that this horoscope is included is because this is a man who is a magnetic healer. He was capable of restoring life to limbs that were completely lifeless. And even withered bodies he could bring back to a healthy state. and he was capable of removing pains. He was a shoemaker that lived in northern England, and people would come and they would pay money so that when he wasn't making shoes, they would want to sit on the bench that he was sitting on. And if you sat on the bench for 15 minutes, it was as restorative as spending a week at the beach getting the sunlight and all of that. The thing that we're looking at here is this. The moon is in Scorpio, which is magnetically strong. And vital energy is not something you want to waste. So we see that there's a very strong sextile between Saturn and the moon. It's almost exact. And this indicates control. He is in control of the vital, of the life ether component of his vital body. He's conservative. He does not waste it. There's a special relationship. There is a 150 degree aspect between the moon and Saturn and Neptune, which is called a yod because it forms a Y. With the moon and Venus in such a positioning, it indicates the moon and Venus are the two most drawing of all planets. So it indicates that he has that ability to draw energy, to attract it to himself. The Venus is almost exactly in the Pleiades, which indicates some kind of a spiritual genius. It is not reported, I don't know if Alan Liu could tell or not, whether he was clairvoyant. But we get the idea here that this is someone who is in control of life energy. Now he has something else that a lot of healers have. He has the ability to, he has a potent prayer ability. Mars is in the first house, and it is in trine to Neptune. And Mars trine Neptune is one that gives a very charged prayer ability. And it also, this is what is necessary for the ability to project. In my experience, the primary ruler of total vitality in the vital body is the sun, and the secondary is Mars. All right, I think we're ready to go on to the next horoscope. Yeah.
Say about the moon in Scorpio.
What?
What did you say about the moon?
The moon in Scorpio. Scorpio is ruled by the lords of form. It's going to come up several more times, so there'll be a repeat, and some other things of it will come up.
What was Pleiades?
There is a nebular spot in the direction of the Pleiades that produces clairvoyance or genius or something like that. We're going to see it on the last day. We're going to see it in a really big way. This is a horoscope we want to look at. I'll get it. That we want to look at carefully, because this is somebody who's live. And when you talk about people who are living, you don't want to say too much. Everybody knows who this is. This is Uri Geller, the famous Israeli psychic and manipulator of energies. All right. I will not say much about this horoscope, partially because he's live and partially because I have difficult feelings about the individual. This is someone who has a lot of etheric energy, and a lot of it is under control. This is a control freak if there ever was one, with the ascendant and three planets in Scorpio. And again, we see the common thing. We see the moon and Venus, which is again that ability to draw energy. It's at his control, and he can manipulate it and use it as he will. And unfortunately, that is not in a very good way. He bends spoons and does all kinds of phenomena through the ether. This gives people faith in invisible things, but he isn't a healer. And we can see that he has a temptation here to the second house, and he has enriched himself greatly through his psychic feats and things like that. You know, I'm cheap. I come here for free. If he came here, it would cost you a lot of bucks. It would cost you a lot of bucks to get Uri Geller here. But at any rate, we can see that he does have all of the capacities of working with the energies directly. All right. Now, let me make sure I got the right one here. Oh, not that one, this one. Rupert Sheldrake. Whee! Oh, the fan is there blowing it out. All right. Everybody knows who Rupert Sheldrake is?
No.
Okay, we'll talk about, I'll introduce. What?
Yeah,
we talked about him.
I talked about him last night. Rupert Sheldrake is one of us. He studies theosophy, but his outlook on the world is like ours. This is not somebody that has prodigious psychic energy. Healing in general is usually medicine, and healing in general is usually the property of water signs. And doctors usually do extremely well, like the whole Mayo family, their cancers. There are two components to healing. One is you have to have the power of will. It's just exactly as Max Heindel tells us, that the doctor lends his will to the patient, and then when the patient has perked up, then the doctor gradually removes the will and the person stands on their own. The other component is compassion. You have to feel for the person and their suffering. Well, Scorpio has the will, Pisces has the compassion, and the combination of the two is found with Cancer. This is why when you find remarkable physicians like the brothers Mayo, that you find that there is a lot in Cancer. There isn't a lot of vitality there. Now, this is a man that was a biochemist, and he lost all of his funding because he was too much like us. And so he's had to make his living in various ways. And so he writes these books of things that we've always believed, but we've never really had proven. And he does these ingenious experiments that prove this to people. Like he has one, he wrote a book about it, that pets know when their owner is coming home. No matter what time of the day it is. But with the use of cameras in the apartments, he would have somebody come home at an hour when the person almost never came home, and the pet always knew it. Got excited and it went to the door well before the person came there. And he uses this to demonstrate that there is an invisible connection between us and our pets. He's done another interesting thing, that in that he has I gotta be careful here, I could get myself in trouble. But most people know when somebody's looking at them. And so what he has done is he has made very ingenious experiments to show that that there are things that you can tell from their actions and even looking around when people are looking at someone, like there's a projection through the ethers. He has to make his living this way. He makes his living now as a speaker and doing things like that, but he lost all of his scientific funding. And he lost his scientific funding because he published a world-famous paper on what he calls a morphogenic field. Morphos meaning form, genic meaning generating. So he's saying that there's a field that generates form. And he does experiments with little shoots of plants using a Wheatstone bridge and other really sensitive electronics. You can't really tell the life ether electronically, but there is some sympathy because even magnetism, like Dr. Deal uses, affects the life ether, but only minimally. the life ether is a different realm. The magnetic ether and the chemical ether, that everything is works magnetically. But he has demonstrated with very sensitive electronics that on the shoot of a plant, there is a little field that surrounds it. And that little field is energetic. And as the plant gets larger, the field gets smaller. And from this, he demonstrates that there is a matrix that is there before the plant. And because this goes against the whole DNA idea, the whole idea is that everything is encoded in the DNA, and the DNA is really nothing but a doorway for the etheric form to come through. The idea that there is a form of life before there is a physical form manifest, that's heresy. And so what has happened is nobody will fund him anymore. In fact, there is $1 million prize that has been on the table for 20 years now for anybody that can disprove his experiment about morphogenic fields, and nobody has claimed $1 million yet. What we have here is somebody who looks into the mysteries of life. The eighth house is the house of mysteries. This is somebody that may not be extremely vital himself, but he is sensitive to the vitality. He also has, again, the Scorpio rising. And the Scorpio is, in the hierarchy that is associated with Scorpio, is the lords of the form. So he is aware of how water works into form, or how water and the life ether in water precipitates form. We have 1 minute left to look at the last horoscope. Everybody knows who Luther Burbank is. There's a whole city in California named after him, so we should know who he is. This is a very lovable man. There are rare editions of his books that you can get. I tracked one down for a friend of mine. It's really beautiful. This is someone, again, who's not especially vital. In this case, there is sensitivity to vitality. Everything, the Sun and Saturn and Neptune are in Pisces. So there is a sensitivity to life. Luther Burbank is a man who loved plants, and he communicated with plants. And what he did is he was capable of producing new hybrids, new plants that are very difficult to produce, and they turned out to be quite remarkable. He would even take on the rose family. The rose family is difficult because it has many more chromosomes than most plants do, and you don't know what you're going to get. Like, if you know, apple is in that family, and raspberries and strawberries. He, in fact, even made a plant that was called a raspberry strawberry. It's quite interesting, the genius of the man. But if you mix two apples together by pollination, you don't know what you're going to get. This is why if they produce new apple species, they make a whole bunch of mixtures from the same two parent trees, and then out of that maybe they'll get one that is worthwhile. Luther Burbank had a genius. He had an ability to do this. And in this case, the genius is not so much because of drawing, it is a different use of the same planets. There is a 30-60-90 triangle, which is a very strong building engine. The Venus is sextile to Neptune, and the Venus is trine to the Moon, and the Moon is opposite to Neptune. Without a doubt, the Moon, Neptune, and Venus, in that order, are the most imaginative of all planets. So this is someone who could, in his imagination, hold the form. And he was sensitive enough that he could probably work with the group spirits, even though he may not have known about it in that way. Well, he did talk to plants and do things like that. This is somebody that could hold an imagination and determine what the species are going to be. Now, this may sound crazy, But it had to have been done in the past. If you take normal methods of pollination and producing hybrids, the lot of the grains that we use, like wheat and rye and such like that, according to the anthropological point of view, which is not the same as ours, humans have not been around long enough to have hybridized the grasses to have made the grains that we have now. So the process had to be accelerated. And it was accelerated in places like the Great Pyramid. Seeds would be put in that powerful vortex, and people who had the imagination, and some of them even having the word of power, could change the form more rapidly than it would happen if you just did normal hybridization. And without getting too far afield, I think it's time to say the Rosicrucian prayer and call it an afternoon. The Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for Thee, so that we may serve Thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Thank you.
Yeah, fun. Ooh.